Today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Nunchet. And the last thing that we learned was the question of why it is that we are able to allow the eating of truma by an arusa just because she ran out of time. The Baal was supposed to perform. He didn't perform. Now he's chayev to be mefarneser. Up until now, we said she's not allowed to eat truma. Now, all of a sudden, she is allowed to eat truma. I thought like truma was a major issue. Does she have a din of a bas yisrael, or does she have a din of an eishes kohen? Well, what does running out of time, which is just a drabbanan forcing him to perform, what in the world would that have to do with the heter of achilas truma? Ooh, we got Stephen back here. My gosh. That's wonderful. So, it turns out that it's actually a machlokas about how this works. So on the one hand, one possibility that we learned is that actually, and this is true according to everyone, midiraisa, you can certainly eat truma the moment there's a kinyan of the isha, because it says kinyan kaspo. So as an arusa, she's also nikneis. And since all of the vahavayot, remember, we had v'yatza v'hayta, from there we learned out that all of the dinim of Kedushin and the kinyanim of Kedushin are compared one to the other. So therefore, if the kinyan kaspo works, so too would the kinyan shtar work, and so too would kinyan bia work. They're all the same. So once we know that he is her husband, essentially, she's allowed to eat truma. Why then did we not allow her to eat truma? So one of the approaches was, the reason we don't allow her to eat truma was because of the proverbial truma, grape-flavored Coke bottle in the refrigerator. That's because regular Coke doesn't have any ingredients that are natural, so there wouldn't be any problem of truma. But apparently in the grape-flavored Coke, they use truma. Fine. So she can't actually have the truma only because of Gezeira. We're worried that she's going to end up sharing some of it with her siblings. And in this case, there's no problem, because once he's run out of time and he's got to give her food, so then he's not going to allow the food to be sent to the house for all of her siblings to drink up all of her Coke. He's going to only feed her in the Truma Cafe for registered Kohanim and Kohanot, and at that point, there's no way she could share it with them. That was one approach. And then we had Reb Shmuel Bar Rav Yehuda's approach, which is that the problem, the first approach is from Ula, the second approach, we said, was Reb Shmuel Bar Rav Yehuda, and that is Simpon. And you remember the overall, I hope Gavi remembered to write down Simpon, even though he was driving at the time. Yeah, okay, great. So the Simpon was something that is a pushback, so to speak. We compared it to the word siphon, or the Simponot, which are the bronchi in the lungs, and that anything which will push back against something is called a simpon. So therefore, if there would have been a mum or some issue that would have passed the kedushin, so then we would not have had a kedushin at all, because it would have been a mekach tos, which would have meant that the entire time she would have been eating truma, which is mamash nisr misa b'dei shamayim. So we don't want that to happen. Masha inkein, once he's run out of time and now he has to start actually feeding her, so then we say, look, at that point, he's not going to be throwing out his money for nothing. He must have made inquiries that were sufficiently intimate among her friends and relatives and so on to make sure that there would be nothing that would turn him off. And that would be enough of a bedika. That's what we were saying yesterday, in which case we were wondering, so then if the issue is sharing, why would we allow an eved? I mean, wouldn't an eved who once worked of Sipon, I'm sorry. Why would we allow an Eved who was once an Eved for Yisrael, was bought by a Kohen? Why aren't we afraid that the Eved would end up having a Simpon? And that then he would go back to being an Eved of a Yisrael, and then he would be eating Truma this whole time, Beisr and so on, right? He's also Chayev. So we answer that Avadim don't have a Chashash of Simpon, because whatever could go wrong with an Eved is either already known, is already public, or you've already accepted because you expect the worst. That was the last thing that we learned. Now, I'm only reviewing it not because we're continuing on the sugya right now, but because, as we'll see, this becomes important in determining the difference between the Mishnah Rishayna and the Mishnah Achrayna that we will be getting to a little bit later in the daf. So let's start from where we got up to yesterday. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, notnim la hakol truma. So when a machlok is in the Mishnah, the idea over there was he's going to give her truma, but she's not able to eat truma all the time, is she? I mean, she's going to be tmei'ah some of the month, and therefore, what good is truma for her? So we got into this machlokus about can he give her truma, and then obviously she would have to sell it during the time that she's not allowed to eat it. According to Rabbi Akiva, no, you can only give half truma, but you can't give the whole thing in truma. So what are we talking about? What's the machlokus? So first of all, Abai explains, listen, let's understand something. If she is a Bas Yisrael, who's getting married to a Kohen, so then everybody would be made that you cannot give her truma. Machloket bebat Kohen lekohen, ava bebat Yisrael lekohen, you can't give her the whole thing truma. And everyone would be made to Rabbi Akiva, divrei hakol mechtzechulin umechtze truma, for a very simple reason. She doesn't know how to deal with it. If she is tmei'ah, if she's, her whole life she's been eating truma, because she's a Bas Kohen, so then, of course, she is very bikiya in how it is that you deal with truma, b'meituma, and so on and so forth. She knows that you have to sell it. But a Bas Yisrael, what does she come into contact with truma? So there, for sure, Rabbi Tarfon would be made that you have to give her chul, and how she's supposed to deal with it. Furthermore, you should know that even then, the machloket is only if she's an arusa. So she is a kohen, Bas Kohen, so when she's in Arusa, she's still living at home. If she's still living at home, even though she's being fed in a truma cafe, but her father is a Kohen, and her father is still going to take care of her. Father, her brothers, they know how to deal with truma, and they will be available. They're not going to have her go out and start walking around Machane Yehuda selling truma. I mean, that's kol kvuda bat melech pnima. We don't expect a woman to do that kind of thing. But if she is a nesu'ah, so then her husband can't expect her. He can't put his wife into a position where she is going to have to run around town selling truma. That's outrageous. We never allow a woman to be in a position, as we've seen many times. Part of the protection of the women that is so central to this mesechet is the idea of preserving her dignity. And therefore, to make her go around selling truma on a little portable wagon she's putting around, and everybody's talking to her, and that's terrible. So we would never do that. So for sure, once she's in a sua, the husband can't do that. If he's not going to take care of it for her, he's going to have to give her chulin to eat. Tanya Namiachi, and there's actually what Abaya says, we can see in the Braita as well, because the Braita says that Ratafin himself said, notin la hakol truma, and Rabbi Akiva omer mechza chulin umechza truma, which is, of course, our Mishnah. And now the Braita actually defines the place where the machlokas is, which ends up being what Abaya said, by defining the machlokas with Bamed Dvorim Amurim. When do we have this machlokas dafka bat kohen? So she's getting married to a kohen. She is from a family that is used to dealing with truma, b'mei tuma. Avobat Yisrael, a kohen, everybody is made of Yerko mechza chulun mechza truma, which is the first part of what Abaya taught us. And over here we see it in the Braita Beferush. And furthermore, the next qualification, which Abaya taught us, was b'mei dvorim amurim ba'arusa. It's only where there is family around to help her. But if she's already nisua, so a husband can't make her go around selling truma. Divrei hakol mechtze chulin umechtze truma. Now, it turns out that the Mishnah was a simplification, actually, of the various shitas that are nogea. We thought it was just a question of mechtze truma, mechtze chulin, versus kulei truma. And the question was the circumstances, and we seem to agree that there are circumstances where definitely she can't be put into a position where she has to sell. But it turns out that there's quite a few variations in how it is that we give her the parts of chulin. Because Rabbi Yehuda ben Bitteira Omer, it's not only that, we can give her not what yours, why mechza umechza? It doesn't make sense. Mechza umechza, it makes more sense that what we will give her is 2/3 truma and one third chulin, because basically she's going to have to, I mean, I agree with you, but why, with you, Rabbi Akiva, but why half? I don't understand. She's talking about, may I have for the month? And therefore, we should allow her to have chulin only for one third of the month. That makes much more sense. So that's yet another approach to the whole sugya. There's yet another approach, Rabbi Yehuda's approach. This is Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, actually, he can give her hakol truma v'hi mocheret lo kachat bedamim chulin. Wow. So according to him, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Tarfon agree, right? In that, he seems to be repeating Rabbi Tarfon. The difference is that Rabbi Tarfon holds that you can actually give her the whole thing in truma and not have to give her the additional truma to cover the costs of translating that truma into chulin, which is really weird, right? Because, I mean, there's not enough food there for her if she's going to have to sell it. But since we're not really expecting her to sell it, because remember the circumstances which you can do this is dafka, which is an arusa, which means that her father's going to be taking care of it. So because of that, Rabbi Tarfon says, look, if those are the only circumstances anyway, she could simply give it to her father. And let her father's got plenty of chulin, so let her father give her chulin in exchange. It's sort of like a situation which comes up all the time. I mean, I'm going to have this in my family very often. You've got dollars and you've got shkolim, right? So some of the kids need dollars, some of the parents need shkolim, or vice versa. So you make a deal that you exchange it with the kids. That's very good, because then you don't have to pay that extra amount. They don't have to pay the extra amount. You don't lose in the exchange. So it's like a common thing, right? So the same thing is true over here. She's got a father who's got chulin. She's got truma. He's able to eat. We're going to just do a favor and exchange it for her, right? So that's what Rabbi Tarfon says. Because anyway, we're talking about the case where there's a father available. So, you know, let's rely on the father's big heart. That's basically what Rabbi Tarfon says. Mashen Kane, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, look, I mean, you have to give her the amount in terms of money that it's worth. You can't rely on somebody else. And therefore, you can give her truma, like Rabbi Tarfon says, but you got to take into consideration that the exchange rate of truma for chulin is going to cost you, let's say, 30%, because of the way that you have to mark it down. Why should anybody pay for truma the same thing they would pay for truma for chulin if there's such a limited market for truma? So obviously, the price is going to go down. Okay, so you've got, that's the difference. But the question of whether you're allowed to give her the mechzer truma, that is still the same, Rabbi Yehuda with Rabbi Tarfon. And now we have another shita. This is shita number 5. This is Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says, yeah, but let me tell you something. Whatever that truma is, forget about the normal exchange rate, which is what Rabbi Yehuda holds. There's no normal exchange rate. You have to give her double. Woo, double truma. Why? Because I understand that it's really only, let's say, a 25-30% difference. But the bottom line is, you need to make up for the fact that you're putting her through all of this trouble to translate the truma into chulin. And in exchange for that tircha, you have to make it very easy for her to sell. So how can you do that? By giving her so much truma instead of chulin that she can sell at a vast discount, because she could take off 50% and still have enough to eat. And therefore, she's being compensated with that extra 20-25%. That's the point. So you're going to have to pay for her tircha. Maybe not. Maybe now, what's the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel? The difference is paying for her tircha. You have to make it up for her. Okay, that settles this question. So now we've got 5 different shitas, turns out, about the a proportion, if any, of truma to chulin. Now, the next thing that we said is that, surprisingly, even though we know that normally a yavam will take over all of the situation of the baal, right? But the Mishnah says not right when it comes to truma. A yavam cannot be machil truma. So why not? Says the Gemara, why not? Because the Torah didn't say kinyan kesef of a coin. It said kinyan kaspo yochalbo. And it means it has to be your own kinyan. You cannot give her a truma where it was your brother, who's of course a Kohen, as you are, your brother was Kena her, not you. So before you actually make that kinyan on her as a Yavam, and that would be the kinyan, which would be the equivalent of a kinyan of Kedushin with Bia, which we learned all the Havayot Mihadari, so then you can't rely on the kaspo of the brother, whatever was the equivalent of the kaspo of the brother, to be enough to give her truma. Furthermore, we have this funny part of the Mishnah, which is the 12-month deal as it's split between the proposed husband who ends up dying before he gets to take her to the chuppah. And so we talked about the 12 months from the time of the tviyah. And it said over there, I don't care if there was 12 months minus one day and she falls to the yavam that one day, or obviously if it's half and half, whatever, the halacha would be that under all of these circumstances, she never started eating truma and will not eat truma until such time as she's actually taken by the yavam. Now, what is the point? If you're telling me that, okay, understand you start off 6 months before the baal, 6 months before the yavam, very nice. Or even if there was the whole thing minus one day, which was one day with the yavam, and then you say this crazy case, which is totally obvious, and even if all of the days were with the yavam and one day with the baal, I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, obviously, if the entire time was with the baal, it was supposed to be mizakar because of kinyan kaspo. So therefore, that's not even enough. So you're going to tell me a case where all of it was spent with the yavam and one day with the baal? I mean, I'm wasting my time. What do you got to tell me that case for? Ask the Gemara. If bifnei ha-baal, you said, is not going to help her eat truma, so why bother mentioning the case bifnei ha-yavam? Me boy, you're not teaching me anything by saying that, are you? Zo ve'in tzarich lomar zo katani. It's true. But remember that one of the valid ways in which the Mishnah presents a case is by saying something that is, wow, even in that case, by repeating it in a case where it's then obvious, the value of such a presentation is that then the person who's reading the Mishnah, who finds himself thinking, wow, isn't that obvious, realizes that, oh my gosh, that means that by reading the first part of the Mishnah, I just became immunized to this tremendous chiddush, and now I think it's obvious. So it makes him sensitive to the Chiddush of the Mishnah. So it's a very sneaky way of bringing to your attention what it is that you just learned, right? This is very cute. So that's called Zove in Tzorch Lomar Zo. Okay, why sometimes Rebbe chose to present it that way, sometimes other way, that's an exciting thing to look at on a case-by-case basis. But in any event, you're right. It certainly is a Zove in Tzorch Lomar Zo. Now, what we said was, this whole discussion, and we learned this before, this whole discussion is only according to the Mishnah Rishayna, but according to the Mishnah Achrayna, forget it. We do not allow him to provide truma at all to an arusa. She's got to get to the chuppah. So why exactly did we flip? Okay, why is it that the Mishnah Achrayna does not accept the chiyav of him to provide, or the ability of him to provide truma once he's already chayav in providing her with her parnasa? Omar ulavi temer of Shmuel bar Yehuda. Now, it's because of Simpon. So this is very interesting, right? Because this was basically the machlokas in the first place, whether it was Bishum Simpon or whether it was because of the Coke bottle. So here, and that was a machlokas between Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda and Ula, respectively, correct? Ula said it was because of the Coke problem. So now Ula himself is saying that it's because of the Simpon, right? So in other words, what has happened over here, as we're going to speak out in a moment, is that Ula says, look, obviously the reason for the original understanding was because of the Coke in the fridge problem. And then they added in the Mishnah Achrona what my dear colleague Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda is saying. They then came to understand that they should add the concern for Simpon. And at that point, it didn't make sense to them to say that, well, it's okay, we'll still allow it. I mean, that's why I didn't want to say what he was saying. Because what do you mean? He made a bedika by asking around. I mean, come on. What's he going to say? You know, you've showered with her, haven't you? You go to the gym with her, haven't you? I mean, you know, tell me. Okay, does he really rely on that? No. He still has in mind, God only knows what's really going on over here. These women never squeal on each other. So because of that, I didn't want to say that that was the reason. So what happened is that once they realized that I was right, and that if there's a concern for Simpon, so then we can't allow her to eat truma at all until she's actually in the chuppah, then they decided to follow me. And now they understand that Simpon would have invalidated her achilas truma bichlal, and they would never have allowed achilas truma. Okay, so that really makes sense, all right? Now, if, note that some say it was Reb Shmuel Bar Yehuda himself who said this, but this is crazy, because Reb Shmuel Bar Yehuda himself held that Simpon was also the reason for the Mishnah Rishayna. So what changed with the Mishnah Achrayna? So here is what the Gemara wants to establish right now. It says, Gemara, Bishlam al Ula. Look, I mean, if Ula was the one who said this, and he was following Yeshida, it works out great. Because the Mishnah Rishona, Kamaisa, was based on the Koch. Shema Yimzigula Kos Bevet Avia. And that would be okay once she's eating in the Truma Cafe. But the Batraita, then they realized that they have to worry Mishum Simpon. And once they realized Mishum Simpon, so then it became Usher until they're in actually in the Chuppah. But according to Shmuel Bar Yehuda, what changed? I don't understand how you're saying, what's the reason that now in the Mishnah Achrona she cannot eat Mishum Simpon? That's what you said was the reason for the Mishnah Rishayna also. So how could, I don't understand. If the Kamaita was Mishum Simpon and the Batraita is Mishum Simpon, so it's a difference between the Mishnah Rishon and the Mishnah Achrona. Ah, Ikebe, now this big difference. The Bedikas Chutz, is that called a Bedika? So Mar Sovar, the Mishnah Rishon held that he actually is Semech on the Bedikas Chutz, meaning the asking around, the investigation among family members and friends. And based on that, he's already committed to the marriage, and relies on it, and it's no longer a chashash, Mishum Simpon. Masha'enke, the Mishnah Achrona holds. No, that's not really good enough. Bedika Schutz, lo shma bedika, and he's not Mismach Daite until such time as he actually gets a chance to be intimate with her personally. Which brings us to a very exciting moment with our beloved Capitan. Now that we've discussed the various issues that are provided to the woman in the ketuvah, and we've touched upon the issues that are provided to the man in exchange for those provisions, oftentimes, just because we don't want to get into situations where there'll be resentment building, right? So let's say we talked about what it is that he gets in return for providing her with insurance against kidnapping, let's say, right? So we said, okay, that's because since he's going to have to provide that insurance, so he is given the right to eat the peiros of her nechasim. Why is he given the right to her work? Because he's providing her with mizonos. And remember, we had some discussion about which came first. Was it the rights of the husband that came first and therefore we awarded the woman her things? Or was the main point, which is how we came out, and we actually changed, if you recall, the language of the braisa, so we're going to go through it again, to go through that very change, is the first yesod, we are concerned with the shoktu, so to speak, from beginning to end. And all of these clauses in the ketuvah provide protection and security for the Bat Yisrael. And that's what we're looking for. And if that's the case, then the reason that we provide him something in exchange is in order to give him a sense of fairness and that it's worthwhile for him to enter into this kind of relationship and to perform properly. Okay. So if that's true, what we need to see is, do we force this? In other words, it's all very nice to say, we want to make sure that you get enough to eat, and therefore your work will be given to your husband, and he guarantees your income, so to speak, income to have enough to eat. What if she says, Don't do me any favors. This idiot hasn't held down a job in years. I'm the one who's the breadwinner in the family, so he can keep his lousy maisonette, and I'm not giving him anything. If he wants to eat, let him go keep a job. Okay, so now that would be a greater freedom for the woman. And this is a general question, bichlal, I mean, because it wouldn't only concern the modality of how it is that we make our takana for the ketubah. It's a general question. In the event that we, midrabbanan, we create a security system for someone in which we want to make life better for you, how about if you don't like the way we make life better for you? This is a very modern question. The government's got a lot of ways in which it makes life better for you. Can you opt out and say, I'd rather not have you tell me how to make my life better and I'll work it out for myself? I mean, you're telling me I have to pay into Social Security like 20% of my salary every month? Forget it. I can make my own arrangements for my old age. I don't need you. Or not. I mean, these are big issues. That just this morning, it turns out that yesterday there was this awful situation in Texas where the temperatures had gone into like over 100 degrees and people turn on their air conditioner. You got to get this. And the thermostat comes up with a message. In order to protect your electrical supply, you are not allowed to turn your air conditioner on below 78 degrees Fahrenheit. They couldn't turn their air conditioners on, come hell or high water. You can imagine the outcry of that thing, right? Okay, so that's the question. Can people tell you what to do for your own benefit or not? Now, what we paskin is that kol ha'omer, this is, please, Gavi, kol ha'omer, write this down, kol ha'omer i'efshi li betakanat chachamim rishai. Somebody says, I don't like what it is that these rabbis are bossing me about for my own good, and I'll take care of myself. They can certainly do that. In which case, if the takana was primarily for her, and we're only awarding him the rights to her work because generally her work would not be enough to support her, and he's going to support her. We don't want him to feel anger and resentment about never getting anything from her. So she can say, I don't want to give him anything. I'd rather not take anything and not give anything. Just leave him out of the equation. So look, Harishi would be allowed to. So what we want to examine over here is not only what it is that these mutual chiyuvim are, but also we'd like to examine it in the context of how valid legally are these rights. What level of opinion are provided by these rights? And that's a very important question. And the way, interestingly enough, the way that we can check that out is by seeing whether it would be possible to make it hegdish. So if something is really yours, you can make it hegdish. If you only have, let's say, a right to collect something, you can't make it hegdish because it isn't yours yet. Now, it turns out that we're going to be able to get to a lot of dinim that we haven't even raised yet. We don't even know about it. And we're going to only find out about it in that context of this interesting idea. So again, if you understand where we're going in terms of the Masechet as a whole, this is the perfect moment to discuss the issue of what it is that I have a kinyan on. If you don't have the global vision of the Masechet, you know, what the heck is going on over here? Why are we interested in Hegdash all of a sudden? It makes perfectly good sense why we're interested in Hegdash, as we'll see. And in that context, we're going to discover things that we never knew. For instance, when we're talking about mizonot, so she gets food. I mean, what about an allowance? I mean, I understand. She gets food. She gets clothing. I mean, is this the only thing that we're interested in? I mean, aren't there just like, you know, spontaneous purchases that a woman would like to have? And now we're going to give away her income to her husband. I mean, so what does she do about that? Well, it turns out that part of his chiyuv of provisions is not only mizonot, but an allowance. And the allowance is called ma'akesev. The ma'akesev is the allowance that is provided by the week for her general expenses without any kind of accounting and so on. We're going to find out about this for the first time in the context of Hegdash. And we're also going to find out what the quid pro quo is, because remember, we've always had a quid pro quo in the Ksuva. As I mentioned to you, the development of the Ketuvah over time was always in terms of balancing out that quid pro quo in order to make both parties feel that the engagement in marriage and the game of marriage is worthwhile. So that this was called chinah, and that both sides have to feel that this is a reasonable type of relationship. You can see what happens in modern times when marriage breaks down completely. People simply don't want to get married because of the fact that it just isn't worth it. Why would anybody want to get tied up in the courts for years when they're trying to get divorced? I mean, this is ridiculous. So why marry in the first place? And this is really what happens when there's a breakdown in the quid pro quo. It just doesn't make any sense anymore. So therefore, our Mishnah begins with the question of Hamagdish Ba'aseh Yedei Ishto. So now what happens over here? There's two new terms, Gavi, that we need to be aware of when we're learning this sugya. One is motar. Motar means where she's making more than the minimum that a woman is mechuyevet to produce. And the other is ma'aseh yadeha. Ma'aseh yadeha is not a salary. It's what a woman commits herself to doing as a woman unsalaried. So in other words, things like taking care of the home, cooking, baking, and a certain amount of knitting or making in those days, remember, the big challenge in life, which is amazing. I mean, we don't even know about it, you know, was not knitting, but was actually making the fibers itself, which is tefiyah, the spinning. So women, remember, until very recently, every house had a spinning wheel. It's so rochok from us that, like, you know, we think of it as sort of old Western movies and so on. But this was standard. Every spare moment, remember, in the same way that every spare moment of a country life was preparing food, that was a constant concern. So there would be like a pot that would be on the stove at all times, and any little piece of stuff that you have that you can use, you put in there, and it just keeps cooking all winter long. So you're always going to have that soup with new things in it. It's like an obsession. There was an obsession with spinning. If you have a few moments, you sit down and you spin, because where are we going to get material from? And that completely changed with the Industrial Revolution. So that all of this sounds very much like, you know, out of some kind of old movie. And it's completely not nogea. But Chazal were koveha, the Maaseh Yadayim. So Maaseh Yadayim, Gavi, is the Gemara, the Mishnah is going to define precisely, and the motar of the Maaseh Yadayim, and the particular interrelationship between what the husband has to provide in exchange for both, for being provided both, to avoid the resentment. So, suppose a husband would go and be Magdish Maaseh Yedei Ishto. So he would say, whatever it is that my wife produces, go straight to Hegdash. Now, this obviously raises a point which we're not going to address immediately, but we will address soon. How can you be Magdash something before it exists? That's called Davar Shaloba La'olam, Gavi. Davar Shaloba La'olam is Nogea Bichlal, Kinyanim across the board. Can I sell something that was Loba La'olam? Can I be Magdash something that's Loba La'olam? For some reason, which the Gemara will examine, the Mishnah doesn't seem to be worried about that issue. And we'll get to that. But let's ignore that issue. Let's just concentrate on the question of whether the husband owns it. So can the husband say, well, since it's coming to me, I want to make it Hegdash. So as it comes in, it's automatically going to go to the Beis HaMikdash. What's the din over there? Harezo osa v'ochelet. She can just do whatever she does and use it to support herself, and he doesn't have a word to say about it. Now, listen, if she's being osavo chelet, it's clear that he is not being machil her, right? Otherwise, what do you mean? Harehi osavo chelet. So in other words, we're talking about a case where, in practical terms, she's not getting support from him. But if she's not getting support from him, so obviously he wouldn't have rights to her maisi adayim. What's he supposed to do, starve? We're going to give him the Maaseh Yadayim when he doesn't give any support. So something's very fishy about the Mishnah, right on the opening, right? If what's the Hava Mina? So this is why this is a marvelous opening into the question of she doesn't want the support. That's what's happening. He wants to support her, but she refuses to accept the support, and she is being Otsav Yochelet. So basically, that's what the Mishnah is addressing in this case, as we're going to work out, because otherwise it doesn't make any sense. Furthermore, it's got to be talking about a case where he would be capable of providing for her, and therefore he's insisting that, look, it's her problem that she doesn't want to take the money, but the bottom line is, whatever she is making is mine, and therefore I want to make it a hekdesh. Well, that's the question. Is that true? Or was it only given to him for her sake, so that she should be guaranteed a proper and reliable income to be able to survive on? Okay, so all of that, take a look at how subtly the Mishnah introduces all of those issues as an interrelated whole simply by putting it this way. That's quite amazing. Anyway, what about the motar? So we've already introduced that terminology. The motar is the what it is that she produces that is above and beyond the understanding that a typical household will provide, let's say, 30 feet of spun thread a week, let's say, right? So anything beyond that is what she's doing on her own time. Does he have a right to the motar? So what if he says that I want the motar of her work to be hegdish? What's the deal over there? So Rabbi Meir says it is hegdish, and Rabbi Yochanan Sandler says it's chulin. Now, this is very strange. I mean, what exactly would there be a difference between the motar and his rights to the motar and the rights to the etzem mizonot? Either he is paying or he's not paying. If he is paying, so then he gets it. If he's not paying, then he doesn't get it. And if she can just say, I don't want your takana, she could say that in either case. It's very confusing. So the Mishnah has really stuck us right smack bang into the middle of extremely complex issues. And therefore, let's start with some statement of Rav outside of the context of the Mishnah, and then see how it relates so deeply to the Mishnah. So, Amar Rav, Amar Rav, Yuchola Isha Lomar LeBaala, Eini Nizonet VeEini Osa. Listen, do me no favors. I'm not interested in your support, and I'm not interested in sitting around on a spinning wheel. You know, my computer is working full time. Believe me, a spinning wheel I can write a program for. So basically, she is denying her rights to support. She doesn't want him to get any of her income. I'm not going to give you, which the equivalent would be if I'm working and I have a job, I'm not going to give you any money. So why does Rav say she can just opt out? Because opting out is an important part of the understanding of a takanas chachamim for her benefit, and that's what we're talking about over here. Remember, Ksuvas is all about her benefit. And therefore, Kasavar ki takinu rabbanan, what is the takana? The takana is not, let's make sure that husbands get a good income from their wives, and in exchange for that, we will give her mizonos. No, it's the opposite. Let's make sure that women are secure with support from their husbands, and in exchange of that, let's give the husband her maisi yadayim so that there shouldn't be any resentment. That's how it works. And therefore, kasava, ki takinu rabbanan, the whole point of the rabbanan, takana mizonos, was to give her the mizonot. The maisi yadayim that's awarded to him in exchange for the mizonot is a secondary point to avoid resentment. That's called eva. Gavi, it's also, we've had it before, but it's kedai to make it official. This idea of eva is the avoidance of resentment. And as you know, bottled resentment becomes hatred. And that's why we don't talk about just resentment. We talk about eva. So that this is the process of the growth of eva. It starts with a little worm of resentment in the heart, which just keeps growing. So that means the mizone is ikar, and therefore when she says, eini nizonet ve'eini osa, she's opting out. And harashut biyada, people have a right to opt out of takonas that are for this benefit. And I hope you guys are getting a sense of the incredible contemporary relevance and the profound social insights all of the things that took literally millennia for the human species to become aware of overall until they became actual issues that have to be dealt with in court and so on and so forth and in major political movements. To see all of this taken into consideration thousands of years ago in the whole process of the creation, I mean, it's absolutely mind-boggling. It's to be so far ahead of the world as a whole, and then to provide, as we always call, the path seekers of Yisrael in dealing with issues that just remain confused in people's minds. That's the Elah HaMishpatim Asher Tasim Lifneihem. And this is just incredible. Lifneihem Velo Lifnei Akum. So, therefore, she opts out, and opting out is a basic right. Meisvei. Question is that the Braita, this is the same Braita that we had before, has a very unfortunate wording. The words in the Braita says, Tiknu mizonot tachat maase yadeo. Remember, we spoke about this before. It seems to be saying that our first concern is to give the husband the rights to the maase yadayim, but since we're going to be taking away her money, we had to have the husband provide for her. But that's the opposite. No, that is clearly a mistake, and the correct way to understand the Braita and to read the Braita, says Rav, is Tiknu Maase Yadea Tachat Mizonot. The Braita wasn't really coming to tell me what is the Iker and what is the Tafel. The Braita was, remember, it was just making a list of things. He gets this because she gets this. So that's all it was doing. It wasn't telling us what the reason was and what came first. If you want to take the Braita and make it fully developed so that it includes not only the juxtaposition of what is for what, medical support is because of this, and the guarantee of providing her security against kidnapping is for this, and then that's all the Braita was doing. So you want to make it work? So then if you want it to go across the board, then you should change it to read Tiknu Maase Yadea Tachat Mizonot. And here we go. Let's take a look at our Mishnah, and you'll see that Rav must be right. Lema Misayale. Because I don't know how else we're going to be able to read our Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Hamagdish Maase Yadei Ishto Harehi Osava Ochelet. So she keeps eating. Now, obviously, we've got to be talking about a case where she's not being actively supported by her husband, because it says she eats, but she is being virtually supported by her husband, meaning that her husband insists that he wants to support her. That's the point. So that if he wasn't able to provide her anything, I mean, the whole discussion is absurd. How could he, we wouldn't give him anything if he's not providing her to be able to eat. She's got to support herself. So obviously she should be able to continue to work and to eat. That's crazy, which we're going to go through the steps of proving that. But that's crazy. So therefore, what we mean is this must be a Mishnah where he's capable and willing of supporting her, and she keeps saying, I don't want it, I don't want it, I don't want it. That's the only way to understand the Mishnah. And because of that, he does not have the rights to her earnings, because she opted out. That's exactly what Rav was saying. Now let's just go through the painful steps to show that that is an unavoidable conclusion, okay? Because first of all, we say, look, it's got to be talking about where she is being supported by him. At least he wants to support her. No, maybe it's talking about where he can't afford to support her. That's absurd, says the Gemara. If he can't afford to support her, so then what's the Chiddush? Maila Memra. What would you say? That a guy can tell his wife, listen, I'm really sorry, I don't have any money, we can't afford any food in the makolet, but I'm going to be taking everything that you work on. So, well, how am I supposed to eat? She says, I don't know, go out and bake food at the street corner. Obviously, he can't do that, because if we're talking about Ibn Sha'in and Izonit, where he couldn't support her, so then Maila Memra, because Afilu Lamandi Amri Yochal Rav Lomar LeEvet, Aseimi VeInizamcha, even if you could say to an Evet Knani, as we'll see, that, listen, I own you, you're going to work for me, and I'm not going to provide you with any food. Well, you need also to eat. So go out to the corner and start doing the windshields on the cars that stop at the red lights, and get enough to be able to eat. It's not my problem that you got to eat, which is a machlokas. But we'll see that that's only true by an Eved Kenani, because by an Eved Kenani, the Torah never defines the relationship to the Eved as tovlo imach. And remember, whoa, boy, you buy an Eved Ivri, like the Gemara puts it, kana adon la'atzmo. Because, you know, I'll bet you think you're going to get rid of your own or your old sochnut mattresses by giving them to the Eved while you go out and buy yourself a new Sealy Posturepedic, right? Wrong. If there's going to be one Sealy Posturepedic, you're going to have to give it to the Eved because you can't sleep on a better bed than he sleeps. It's a stavlo imach. Okay, so that's called adon li'atzmo. So obviously you couldn't do that to an Eved Ivri. See be imach. You can't tell him, go work and then go work on banging on doors or windshields to get food. Well, if that's true about an Eved, a Koshiken, it's true about your own wife. So then it's got to be talking about that you do have the means and the will to support her. And she must be saying, I don't want your support. And because of that, the husband does not get any rights to make an Akdash, right? All adds up exactly to what Rav was saying. Well, maybe not. Maybe indeed the Mishnah is not telling us any Chiddush. Maybe indeed it's talking about that he can't support her even if he wants to. He doesn't have the money to support her. And you're 100% right. There's no Chiddush. Obviously, he can't be Makdash. But the Chiddush is the Seifa. The Seifa, which talks about the Motar, we're over there. Even though this is the case that he can't support her, there's still going to be a shita of Rabbi Meir who says that he does get the rights to the Motar and it's Hegdash. Was Rabbi Yochanan Sandro Merchulin? And maybe that is the whole point of the mission. The first point was only to clarify that it's talking about the case where he's not actually giving her that support. So what it seems to be saying is that even though it's not given support, nonetheless, he can still be magdish the allowance. Now, why would that be? So the difference is, as we're going to see, is that the actual exchange, in other words, the quid pro quo that gives her, he gives him the rights to take her maisa yadayim, and that's in exchange in terms of Eva for her mizonot, is very different. That is defined by his giving mizonot. If he gives mizonot, he gets it. If he doesn't give mizonot, he doesn't get it. Okay, and therefore, the first part of the mission, you're right. He doesn't get it. That's obvious. The thing is that the din of his rights to motar are not a direct quid pro quo that if he gives her an allowance, then he gets the motar. Basically, he always will owe her motar. He just can't collect it. So as we're going to see, so in other words, it's not a direct, well, if you gave her an allowance, therefore you get the motar. Because it's not something that is a standard type of interrelationship. So he gets a right, but that right is a lien. That's all that it is. He can't turn a lien into Hegdash right now. And we're going to see that Rabbi Meir agrees that it doesn't become Hegdash until she dies and he inherits her. So then once he actually owns that money because of a Yerusha and he committed his lien on that money to go to Hegdash, therefore it goes to Hegdash. There are many different approaches, I must tell you. I'm taking the simplest approach and that this would work as a she'ibud. That runs into questions of why Hegdash doesn't cancel a she'ibud and so on. It was because he didn't have the rights to it at this point. But in any event, you get it that there's the important point is to the Mishnah is making only highlighting the difference between the quid pro quo, which is a contingency. If you actually provide, then you get, which is true about the Maisi Adayim to Mizonot, versus the level of the quid pro quo, which is not a contingency, but which is a lien for the exchange of the allowance that you owe her for the motar. We'll see more about this later. But meanwhile, we've discovered a whole new din. And that's this halacha of the motar and what you get from it. Now, this halacha that we say that according to Rav Huna, she can opt out and that he does not have any rights to this. This is not the way Reish Lakish understands. Because Reish Lakish says, listen, guys, you're reading this Mishnah. Do not make the mistake. I know a lot of people who make this mistake. Do not make the mistake of thinking that the reason that Rabbi Meir said over here that you do have a right to the Hegdash of the Motar is because he holds that Ona Magdish Davar Shalobala Olam. Now, this right now, this is like a tangential issue. We said, whoa, wait a minute. What about the fact that you can't make something hektish if it doesn't exist? Now we're finally going to raise that point in the context of bringing Reish Lakish understanding of the Mishnah, which is different than Rav Huna. It has nothing to do with Rebbe Meir believing that Adam Magdish Dover Shalom Ba'alayolam, because in fact, Rebbe Meir does not believe Adam Magdish Dover Shalom Ba'alayolam. So then, I don't understand. So then how in the world could he possibly be Magdish Hermaisi Adayim on the Motar? Because what Rebbe Meir is saying is, since he can force her to produce, and that's part of her, he can go to court and demand that she produces. So therefore, it's as if he said, not that the thing should become Kodesh when she makes it, but rather my rights in court of forcing production, those rights are given to Hekdesh. So what he says, if he said, let her hands, that is to say, the right that I have to force those hands in court to produce, let that right be given to Hekdesh. And therefore, whatever is going to be produced will end up belonging to Hekdesh. Let's imagine a case where somebody wants to give the produce of a tree to Hekdesh. You hold that Dover Shalom Ba'alayolam, he can't be Magdish. So if he tries to say, when the pears come out on this tree, it belongs to Hekdesh. Because there are no pears. But if he gives the tree to Hekdesh for its pears, so then it was a Hekdesh tree that produced pears. The same thing would be true over here. He's giving the rights of the Yadayim that he has to Hekdesh, so then as those Yadayim produce, they produce for Hekdesh. That's the reason that Rebbe Meir said this, because Naaseh Komer, says if he said, Yikachu Yadayich Lo Seyan. Wait a minute, Reish Lakish, what do you mean it's as if he said? But that's not what he said, darn it. I mean, look what he said. He said, I want to be Magdish Ramaisi Yadayim, and you're turning it into this whole complicated legalese, which he never talked about. So what are you saying? V'halo amalachi, that's not what he said. Don't tell me it's as if he said. How could it be as if he said? That's because of a new idea, which we've seen actually, not in this Masechta, but we have seen many times before, Rebbe Meir Gavi, and that is Ein Adam Motzi Dvarav Levatala. People don't talk utter balderdash, which means that when their intent is to make something happen, and they may not be such pekiyim as to know precisely what the legal modality is of allowing it to happen. So this guy doesn't know the difference between Dover Shalom Ba'alayolam or between being magdashit in a way in which he wouldn't run into the Dover Shalom Ba'alayolam. When a person wants to achieve a result, then what we do is automatically interpret what he is saying, because we understand that I want to achieve this result. You guys get the lawyers to figure out how to do it. I don't need to do that. And that's Rebbe Meir Shita. We always say that since he's not talking nonsense, what he really means is, and we say what it is. So that's what Rebbe Meir says. Let's say that the classic case of Rebbe Meir is that somebody tries to give the erech of a newborn. Oh, he's so excited with his newborn. He says, but let the erech of my baby be hekdesh. Now, a baby does not have an erech. As we know, it has to be from Shloshim Yom. You can't give an erech to a new newborn infant. But Rebbe Meir says, look, the guy's not insane. What he really wants to do, therefore, is to give the damim. And he just used the wrong word, but he's trying to achieve some gift to Hekdesh in exchange for his infant. So that's really what he understands. He's not stupid to think you could do something that doesn't make any sense. Same thing is true over here. So since he holds Ein Adam Motzi Dvar Levatala, therefore it's as if he said, Yikachu Yadayich L'Oseyem. Now, first thing I want to discuss in Reish Lakish about, is it true what he's saying? You're saying that Rebbe Meir should not be held as maintaining that an Adam can be Magdish Dover Shalom Ba'alayolam. Is that true? Sever Rebbe Meir in Adam Magdish Dover Shalom Ba'alayolam? Well, I happen to know, and we've had this just recently, and we had this back in Yevamos. Ha'oyimer le'isha, ha'reat mekadeshet li la'achash et gayer, o la'achash et tit gayri, o la'achash et shtachrer, o la'achash et tishtachreri, o la'achash yamud ba'aleich, o la'achash et tamut achotech, to whom I'm married, o la'achash yachlotz lach yevimech. So right now I know I cannot be magdish you. Why not? because I'm not Jewish, okay? You're not Jewish, okay? You're married, okay? And so on and so forth. But I want to give you this money now so that as soon as we knock your husband off, you're automatically Mekudesha to me. Or as soon as you become Jewish, you're automatically, I mean, like that's totally a davar shelo bala olam. I mean, the person that this kinyan could be working on or meet, who's trying to make the kinyan. We don't legally exist yet, so to speak. And Rebbe Meir says, it works. Mekudeshet. So what are you telling me that Rebbe Meir should not be construed as holding that Adam Magdish Davar Shelo Ba'al Olam? He absolutely does hold that an Adam can be Magdish Davar Shelo Ba'al Olam. Reish Lakish is engaged in a waste of time. So why did he say that? Yes. Now, wait a minute. Let's not misunderstand what's going on over here. May I he, from that price, yes, you can properly conclude that according to Rabbi Meir, Adam Kain Magdish Davar Shelo Ba'al Olam. All Reish Lakish meant to say is, if you're reading this Mishnah, you cannot conclude that because there would be another reason for Rebbe Meir to say it. And that's important for us to understand that in this case, even though normally it's true that we paskin not like Rebbe Meir in this, and we paskin aid on the motzi, in on the magdish davar shelo ba'olam, we could still hold of Rebbe Meir. Why? Because Benogea, the other psak of Rebbe Meir, that it's considered to be the equivalent of saying that the Yadayim should be Kotshula or Sehem, that we could still paskin like Rebbe Meir. So now the question is, when does this Kedusha come into effect? Hamotar Rebbe Meir Omer Hegdash. When? When does it become Hegdash? If currently he's not providing her with the allowance, so how could it become Hegdash right now? I thought that it's hers because she needs the allowance, right? So Rav Shmuel Domer Tarvayu, all that he's done, basically, is he's given the lien that he has for the right to it. Well, when is he going to be able to exercise that lien? I mean, she's going to need it for the allowance. Ah, what if she dies? So she doesn't need the allowance when she's dead, does she? So at that point, he inherited her, didn't he? So if he inherited her, now we say, okay, so now he should go to Atlantic City and start gambling, right? No, because since he had the lien earlier while she was alive, and at that point he said that whatever it is that I do own here goes to Hegdash, the moment that she dies and he's Yorisher, it does go to Hegdash. That's what Rebbe Meir is saying. But of course, it won't actually go to Hegdash until she actually dies and he inherits her. Rav Shmuel Damar Tavayu, Motar La'achar Mita Kadosh. So it's only after he dies. Whereas Rav Bar Ava says, no, as soon as she has a motar that she made, and that means that even while she's alive, he actually gets the rights to it. Now that we're going to need to, unfortunately, put off. It's getting late about how this would work. In other words, how do we relate the second case of the Mishnah of the motar to the first case of the Mishnah of the actual Maisei Yadayim, where we're saying it's quite clear that she can opt out? And why is that opting out option that's not available for the allowance, or what? I mean, the way that Rebbe Meir was explained, according to Rav Shmuel, makes very good sense to me. I understand the difference between the two takanas, but I certainly don't understand what Rav Bar Ava is saying. I mean, ought to be the same. That we'll look into, Bezrat Hashem,